I am going to hazard a guess that almost every woman in this room has a complicated relationship with this story. And that equally has just a little bit of guilt about that. For me, this story is invaluable in the Gospels because of the way that Jesus insists that Mary has a place in this learning community with the male disciples. This is a powerful testament to all women everywhere that God sees us as valuable and equal members of the fold. In fact, if we look at this story together with the story that immediately precedes it, there is an even more curious claim being made. There are no verses left out between the story we read today and the story we read last week, which you might recall was the parable of the Good Samaritan. Scholars have linked these two stories, suggesting that Mary's acts of discipleship are a continuation of the discourse on the greatest commandment. The Samaritan is lifted up as an unlikely and even scandalous exemplary neighbor. Mary is lifted up as an unlikely and definitely scandalous exemplary lover of God. Prevailing thought about women in the first century, both Greco-Roman and Jewish, saw women's bodies as an inherent barrier to being full people and connecting with God. So to suggest that the ideal lover of God is a woman, that is next to unthinkable in the first century. And I would also add that Mary seems to be an exemplary model of lover of herself. She puts aside oppressive ideas about who she should be in relationship to these men, and she behaves as if she already knows that she is a beloved child of God, worthy of knowledge and teaching and the presence of Christ. She sees herself the way God sees her, and she lives that way. The greatest commandment is to love God and to love one's neighbor as oneself. Mary is the illustration for how to love God and to how to love oneself as God does. But then there's Martha. How many of us know that we are overworked and exhausted, doing too many things with too little help, serving and serving and serving until we snap? I don't think there's a single person in this room who has not had a Martha moment. And it is no secret that Americans are chronically overworked, underloved, and disconnected from each other. When was the last time you spent a whole hour without checking your phone? Or a whole day without checking your email? When was the last time you did not feel busy? The message that our culture gives us seems to be that we can live better and have more and worry less and be more fulfilled, but only if we work harder. If we work harder, we will be safe and loved and comfortable and happy and good enough. This story reminds us that the Christian life is a life that stands against, as best it can, this culture of working harder and harder and harder for no gain. This story reminds us that working harder is not always the answer. But what I can't stop wondering about, and what makes this story complicated for me, is this nagging question. What if some of Martha's work was necessary? What did it take to feed all of those disciples, to house them, to attend to them? Who was going to do that work? When Jesus said to Zacchaeus, "I am coming to your house," you bet your bottom dollar that Zacchaeus had his wife get that house ready. But Martha, you might have noticed, is a householder of her own. It's Martha's house. There's no husband. And so Martha is actually doing quite a lot of work by herself. We as Americans need these real messages about slowing down and letting the task list go in order to face our busy culture. But something to me does not feel right about just dismissing Martha like this. So many of us rely on the hard work of thankless, invisible people all the time. And it's easy for us, who might be at the top of the pecking order, to say that those who are under us should just let it go. It's so easy to dismiss Martha for being a jealous and catty woman while not addressing the oppressive reality that put her in that position in the first place. How are we to address the great American busy while not also acknowledging that caring for others in a messy culture like this takes an incredible amount of work, work that is not always shared equally? In response, I want to point out a couple of things. First, I don't think Jesus is actually chiding Martha here. I think he's making an invitation. Because let's be honest, if Jesus wanted to rebuke Martha, he would have no qualms about being harsh and bold. This is a man who refers to his own mother as woman many times. But here, he calls Martha by name twice. Jesus is acknowledging the box that Martha has been put in, and he is compassionately and lovingly inviting her out of it. Second, the English translators made an odd choice in this passage. When Jesus says that Mary has chosen the better part, the Greek does not actually include a comparative. In Greek, this says something more like, Mary has chosen the good part. Jesus never uses the word better, and I think that softens things a little bit. It's almost as if he is saying, this good is available to you too, Martha. Come. All of these things can wait. We do not need you to wait on us hand and foot. You are one of us. Be here, and we can share this work. So, I suggest Jesus' invitation is not only an invitation for us to try and put down our worked and busy lives, but to also allow do the same. Sometimes stopping and listening to God will result in the necessary tasks getting shared and unnecessary tasks not happening at all. And we need to be okay with that. Again, I wonder if pairing this with the story of the Good Samaritan might help us. For the Samaritan, a man of means who has an animal and enough money to give freely, following the greatest commandment meant giving more of himself. For Mary and Martha, expected to serve to the point of losing themselves, the greatest commandment means letting oneself receive the love of God. There is a time for service and a time for working tirelessly to care for others. But if we do not balance that with the time that we take to love God and to love ourselves, then our service becomes burnout. Luke does not finish this conversation. And so perhaps if we were to prayerfully continue this story in the tradition of Midrash, those same disciples who just got a lecture about serving others in order to inherit the kingdom, perhaps Jesus asked them to get up and finish the meal. Or perhaps they took on those roles without even being asked. Perhaps Martha sat down and Jesus took the crying baby, and Peter played magic tricks with the snotty three-year-old, and while James and John snuck into the kitchen to finish the stew and sneak just a little bit too much spice into it. Maybe the very idea of this was so scandalous that the man who wrote this gospel could not even record it. We don't know. But we do know that Jesus has given us permission and to sit at his feet, to let these tasks go, to focus on one thing that is most important, listening to God and listening to each other. Jesus gives us permission to just be beloved children of God once in a while, to meet Christ in the person right in front of us, just as Mary did. His compassionate invitation to Martha is to let her see herself in that same way, as worthy as a seat at the table. We too are invited to hear that invitation. We too are worthy to have a seat at the feet of Christ, no matter what needs to get done, no matter what others tell us about our own worth or value. The necessary tasks can be shared, and the unnecessary ones can wait. I think that if we allow that to drive our lives, we might no longer need all the tasks and the achievements. We might find that these things were attempts to earn a love that already belongs to us. Amen.